This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
What's up, guys? Welcome to the Juice Podcast. My name is Salman Ali, at Salman Ali NBA on Twitter. You're joined by Forrest Walker, at Do Nots on Twitter. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm pretty good.
Did you watch the lottery yesterday?
I didn't watch the lottery because I don't feel like I need to watch the lottery to know what happened during
It's high entertainment, man. It is high entertainment.
I watched a few of them, but it's mostly just a bunch of people standing in a room, so...
But it's a bunch of nervous people standing in a room, which makes it fun. Like, it's a bunch of people, like, with their jobs on the line, and they're all watching ping pong ball that just happened, like, half an hour earlier. It's great. I love it.
It's so weird. That's so weird to me that everything has already been decided, but we're just watching people find out. Look, I guess it's spectacle, but...
And they tape it, too. They tape it inside the room.
I'm around nervous people all the time. I don't need to see more nervous people. They're going to... No, they'll be okay. They'll all be okay, except for the Knicks, who will never be okay.
It's not even a ping pong ball thing anymore, right? It's like a combination type of thing, right?
Yeah, they do like a computer thing now. And it's... Yeah, it's weird, because it isn't even just like ping... Like it's not like there's a bunch of ping pong balls and whichever one pops up is which. It's like there's some number of different scenarios... And it's like 14,000 or something like that. And then each one has like a certain outcome of all the picks affiliated with it, I believe is how it works. So, yeah, they just draw a number and that number tells them like the whole scenario.
We've come a far way from envelopes, is what you're saying.
It's true. It's true. The envelopes are just too susceptible to chicanery and hijinks.
Yeah. So I wanted to wait like a week before recording this podcast because I feel like after a playoff loss, people's heads just aren't in the right place. And I think a week is enough distance. People have marinated in this loss long enough. They have proper perspective. So the things we say on this podcast will be better received. Hopefully.
Yeah, it's like how you wait a week to say Avengers spoilers on the timeline.
Right, right. I also think this particular loss was really deflating for Rockets fans. I'm not sure if it was more devastating than last year because of the way everything went down, you know, the Chris Paul injury, the 27 missed threes, the talk of the officiating. But it sure felt like fans were more defeated after this one.
I think so. My take on this is that I feel like this loss is maybe easier to get over, but also hurt more, if that makes any sense. And my feeling is that this loss kind of makes last year's loss real in a way that it wasn't before. Like, last year, we're like, oh, they lost, but hey, it'll be better next time around. And then this year made everyone have to go, well, it didn't get better this time around. And maybe that really, you know, maybe something is missing now. Like, all the worries we had over the course of this whole last year since they lost last season, all the trials and tribulations over this season, and it seemed like they had finally pulled away from all that, and they really had addressed it, and they looked better, and then, no, actually, never mind. All the worries you had earlier have been made real because they lost yet again.
Yeah, and as we said earlier, they had the crutch leaving last year of, oh, we didn't have Chris Paul for game 6 and 7. And we were leading at halftime in both games. And maybe if we had Chris Paul, things would have went differently. And this time, you had Chris Paul. There was this talk about maybe it's better to play the Warriors earlier than later because you don't want anyone to get injured. And the Rockets were completely healthy. And Kevin Durant was not healthy. And you lost game 6 on your home floor. Like, those combination of things can make this one sting a little bit differently.
Yeah, and then you even kind of weirdly to dig the knife in even more, you have like Ethan Sherwood Strauss going out there writing about how he thinks that the Rockets probably win if Durant doesn't get hurt, which doesn't make it feel any better, honestly, that like some smart heads are like, yeah, actually losing Durant might have helped them against the Rockets.
Yeah, so I've heard that theory. It's basically that the Warriors play a more equipped style of basketball without Durant, like a more equipped to beat the Rockets style of basketball without
Durant.
Just
that the Rockets have gone all in on beating Durant and less so on, you know, dealing with how they play without Kevin Durant, and not even necessarily a value judgment of whether they're better or worse without him, just that it blows up Houston's plans.
Well, we kind of talked about this on our last podcast. Like, I agree with the idea that the Warriors definitely play different without Durant. Like, they play faster. They just play with an elevated level of enthusiasm on both ends of the floor. But I'm not particularly sold on the idea that they're a better basketball team. Steph definitely seems to play better, and we have a mountain of evidence to suggest that. And Klay Thompson seems to play better, and like, Draymond seems to take more responsibility. I don't think the team is better. And the Rockets, yes, they're equipped to take on this isolation style of basketball, but the reason the Warriors play this isolation style of basketball is because the Rockets take them completely out of their sets with the way they switch everything. It's a monkey wrench.
Yeah, yeah, it's an unexpected left turn that honestly didn't look like it helped any, though of course everyone's gonna say, you know, oh, whatever, you're trying to make excuses after the fact. But I don't know, I feel like this, I think weirdly this coming season I'm going to end up being not the downer guy, because this one doesn't really, they just weren't as good of a team as they were the previous year, and there's so many reasons why. And even so, this wasn't that bad of a series, really. Every game was a couple of possessions. They didn't get blown out ever. It was a really tight six-game series. It doesn't feel really that shameful. I know everyone wants it to be shameful, but like, Clint Capella was giving them nothing. Daniel House, who was a huge part of their late season run that they pulled off, wasn't able to play. So there are reasons to feel like they did pretty well, all things considered. And yeah, they came up short yet again, but I don't know. It in the long run, I feel like this isn't quite as grim as last season was.
I think they lost the series by a combined 11 points, if I'm not mistaken. Like that's just ridiculous. Like the Rockets definitely pushed the Warriors more than any other team has in the Kevin Durant era. Like that's at this point irrefutable. Like they just do. They take the Warriors out of what they're comfortable in doing, and they force them to play a different style of basketball than they like to. Like, they like to move the ball, they like to play at a fast pace, they like to switch everything defensively, and the Rockets are equipped to, you know, kind of disrupt that style.
Yeah, I don't, like, a lot of people are saying, oh no, the Rockets have to pack it in, you know, you've lost four of the last, yada yada, but yeah, this wasn't bad.
I want to talk about Game 6 first. So, throughout Game 6, I just felt like they were tight offensively. Like, I just felt like throughout the game, I never felt like there was a point in the game where they really got it rolling. They would stay in it.
Yeah, my read is that it felt like Game 5 was a gut punch, and they did a pretty good job of coming back from that gut punch, and they very nearly won, but they did look tight. They did look like they weren't just, like, going all out, right? Because they were having to they have to play in such like a controlled fashion against the Warriors, and it really does seem like it takes out of them, especially when they get those gut punch losses. So yeah, this is actually a thing that I'm gonna keep getting into, which is that it seemed like they were in their own heads a little bit, and they've kind of necessarily been in their own heads for a while now because of how devoted they are to chasing the Warriors and rings.
Yeah, I thought the Rockets played like a B plus game and the Warriors played like an A game. Other than Steph Curry in the first half, I thought the Warriors were excellent. Like, and I hate to keep talking about Draymond because I know Rockets fans hate Draymond Green. The guy was just a monster this series, and especially in Game 6. Like, he just disrupted everything. Absolutely everything. And the Steph-Draymond pick and roll was just so devastating, and the Rockets had no answer for it. And they knew it was coming because the Warriors were injured up and down the roster, And there was no other choice but to run the Steph and pick and roll, the Steph and Draymond pick and roll to death. And the Rockets just could not slow it down. And even in the instances that they could slow it down, in the instances that they got the shot that they wanted defensively, Andre Iguodala would hit like a back.
Andre Iguodala.
Like, and that's possibly the most frustrating thing if you're a Rockets fan. Like, you can do everything correctly, and Andre Iguodala, the guy who's like a 33% three-point shooter, will go 5-for-8 in a game 6. Like that, yeah. That's extremely frustrating.
Hit 5 threes in a game, which he has never done on that roster.
Those Andre Iguodala and Draymond Green threes feel like more of a they feel like more of a gut punch than Steph Curry three-pointers, because at least with Steph Curry three-pointers, you know that they're coming. With, you know, with Andre Iguodala three-pointers, you're giving it to him, and when he's hitting them, it's just so deflating. Because the Rockets, I don't think they played a great game defensively. I mean, they could not defend Klay Thompson. They just left him open entirely too many times. But I thought they played like an okay game defensively. And an okay game defensively depends on Andre Iguodala missing three-pointers. And unfortunately for the Rockets, he just would not miss three-pointers.
Yeah, eventually one of Draymond Green or Andre Iguodala won't be on the Warriors anymore, but who knows when that'll be.
And the same problems that consistently plagued them throughout the regular season and in Game 1s and Game 2 caused their downfall in Game 6. Like, offensive rebounding was a problem. Kevon Looney was all over the glass. Defensively, I just didn't feel like they were sharp. I thought they were okay, but like, particularly on Klay Thompson, he had a big game, and he carried Golden State for that first half when Steph Curry was down. Like, when he had 0 points, like, Klay Thompson had a monster half for the Warriors and kept them in the game.
Yeah, they had to play, out of their minds, honestly. That was a really good game from the Warriors, and it was just barely enough to beat Houston. So, yeah, it's definitely a horrible gut punch, but it was painful how it went down, but that it went down, I don't know. I mean, you made the Warriors. You made the 73-win Warriors, minus Leandro Barbosa, I guess.
And Harrison Barnes,
yeah. The 73-win Warriors minus those guys had to really give a good effort to win that game. And you can say, oh, well, Steph didn't have a very good first half. Well, he had a really good second half, so I think it kind of comes out in the wash. That's an excellent team. They're one of the two best teams ever. So that, I don't know, it's hard to feel horrible about losing to them, even though it does sting to just keep losing them over and over and over again.
It really did feel like the better team won this series. And that's probably a miscalculation on my part. Like, I just didn't think the Warriors had this kind of basketball in them anymore. Like, it really felt like in that Clippers series, we were starting to see the end. And they came in here, Draymond looked amazing, and they won this series. They won this series more than the Rockets lost this series. It's okay to say that.
Yeah, I feel like maybe last year's series did actually mean something to them, because it did seem like they came out this year and were like, oh, we can't mess around with these guys. Like, in everything they keep saying too, they're like, no, you have to go all out with the Rockets. They no longer, you know, just view the Rockets as an annoyance. They actually want to work to beat them. And the Warriors have looked so disinterested, and Houston is the only team, it seems, that can actually get them to get out there and really play hard. That or when they don't have to deal with Kevin Durant, they feel a lot more free and easy, but that's we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, they definitely have a level of reverence for the Rockets that I don't even think the general public has. Like,
No, not even close.
Yeah, like Steve Kerr, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, even Draymond to an extent, like, all had positive things to say about the Rockets after they defeated them in Game 6. Like, they were just singing the Rockets' praises, and they were talking about how this is the toughest team we've played in this 4 or 5 year stretch that we've been the Warriors. Like, this is easily the toughest team. And, like, you're right. Like, they did not mess around. Like, they started the death lineup in Game 1. They stuck to their principles, and they just flat out won this series because they were better and they did not mess around. Like, every possession of this series felt like the most important possession of the series.
Both teams gave it everything, which is something that I think a lot of people are leaving behind. And yeah, you're right. They do give a lot more deference to this team than, like, I think they've moved into that small echelon of teams that the Warriors actually respect at this point. They might not like them, but they respect them, and they get that it's going to be a real fight from them. Which, like you said, it's funny that the Warriors themselves have more respect for the Rockets than, like, their fans and fans in general seem to. Which is such a weird impulse to me, for fans to say, oh, my team is the best, and everyone who loses to them is garbage and worthless. Okay, yeah. So if everyone sucks except for your team, how are they very impressive? No, except that other teams are good too, and that this victory is impressive.
Right, right. Let's talk about James Harden. Because in Game 6, he had 35 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals on 57.8% true shooting. Those are good numbers, right? You would agree.
Yeah. Yeah. Not like world-beating numbers, but quite good.
Right. Had a rough fourth quarter, had a couple of key turnovers, and he missed a layup. The free throw shooting wasn't great, but I thought this was largely like an A-minus to B-plus kind of game for Harden. It was pretty good. It wasn't great. But the amount of crap he caught after this game, after a series where he averaged 34 points, 7 rebounds, nearly 6 assists, 2 steals, 3.8 turnovers on 35% usage and 60% true shooting. Like, we're not doing this again. I'm sorry. We're not going to pretend like Harden had a bad series or that the reason the Rockets lost was because of James Harden. We're not doing this. I feel like at a certain point, you're just fishing for something to attack him about. Because I watched this entire series, and I honestly feel like Harden played some of the best playoff basketball he's ever played. And I don't know of anyone who objectively watched this series. I don't know how you can take away anything but that.
Yeah, the only complaints I've seen that have had any the smell of merit to them at all have not been about his stats whatsoever. They've been about the idea of like of leadership and intangibles and stuff like that, right? The idea that perhaps he could have set a different tone during the series. Perhaps he, you know, like at the end of games, he seemed like he became a little passive, and maybe he needed to be more aggressive. It's all that kind of stuff, and I think there's a discussion to be had there. But that's not like that. That's really nitpicking at the fringes of greatness, right? Like that's like, okay, well he's amazing, but he could have done more to really elevate his team, and you know, like maybe he could have been on the level of poise of like a Steph Curry or something instead of like himself. But yeah, I feel like you're splitting hairs at that point. He was very good in the series. Theoretically, he could have been better, but just theoretically.
Yeah, and like I bring up these stats to people, and they're just like, "Well, the numbers don't tell the whole story." Well, hold on, aren't you some of the same people that brought up James Harden's numbers when he had terrible Game Sevens or Game Sixes or elimination games, like? Aren't you some of the same people that would bring up, okay, these are his playoff numbers as compared to his regular season numbers? So when I bring you that he had good playoff numbers this year, you just completely dismiss him. Is that what we're doing right now? Because like you can't do both. You can't have a hand in both camps. You can't. You can't just move the goalpost like that. Harden in fourth quarters in the playoffs, fifth, 7-8 points per fourth quarter. And he was really efficient in these fourth quarters. He had good numbers in these fourth quarters. We're essentially talking about the fourth quarter of Game 5 and the fourth quarter of Game 6. And in the fourth quarter of Game 5, he took one shot attempt in the last 8 minutes. And that's the famous stat, right, that everybody's throwing around. That's the stat, right? But if you look at – if you watch those plays, you know, these eye test guys, right? Like, oh, like I was watching the series. Harden wasn't aggressive. Okay, these eye test guys, watch the possessions. Go back and watch the film. Watch those possessions where Harden was just controlling the offense, and the Rockets had an offensive rating that was through the roof. I hate to get off on a tangent on this, but I just feel like we're – like the story for years was Harden's not good in the playoffs. And then I show you his playoff numbers, or he has a good playoffs, where it's, okay, now he's not good in elimination games. Okay, then he has a good elimination game. It was like, oh, well, his fourth quarter wasn't great. So, like, you're essentially nitpicking him for losing is what I'm getting, is what we're getting here. We're essentially nitpicking him for losing to the Warriors.
Yeah, and that's something that he's gonna get hit with every time he loses to the Warriors. I don't know. I guess it doesn't really bother me, I suppose, because it's only a concern if it affects him negatively in some way. It doesn't matter to me what people think of James Harden. As far as I can tell, he looks like he's gonna be a rocket for the rest of his career, and he doesn't show any signs of like slowing down right now. So I'm not worried about it. People can think what they want to think, but he's gonna do his thing whether they believe in him or not.
Yeah, it's just something I had to get off my chest because this is just nagging at me for a couple of days, and I didn't really say much on Twitter. I tweeted out his stats for the series, and that's it. Like I've kept quiet about this, but this is just really annoying that we're doing this again. Like he has to have like a perfect, pristine game, top to finish, and win the basketball game for him to leave without criticism.
I think at this point he just has to win a championship. That's it. There's not going to be any change in the narrative around James Harden unless he wins a championship. And unfortunately, I don't think there's any more nuance beyond that.
I guess. So we're 1 week removed from the season. If you were to give them a grade, what kind of grade would you give them?
I would give them a C plus because they started out as like a D minus and they ended up at like an A minus. And so the horrible early effort for the season, but made up for it pretty well. So decent mark passing, but you could have done better.
I'm actually with you. I'm in that C plus to B minus area, and a lot of this season is like perspective, right? Like, how are you viewing the Rockets? At what point do you start viewing them? Because like, if you're viewing them when they're 11 and 14, and you see that they make it to the second round of the playoffs and they lose to the Warriors in six, that's a pretty good season, right? Like, if you're just viewing it through that lens where the Rockets start 11 and 14, but if you view it through the normal lens of starting the regular season with high expectations, we think they're going to win like 58 plus games, and they end up winning 53, and we both think that they're second best team in the Western Conference, and they don't make it to the conference finals. Then it's a little disappointing, right? Then it gets tough to grade there, and that's kind of where I'm at. Like I think they did a really great job at recovering from where they were. I thought the mid-season additions they made were pretty good. I think they have a good chance at keeping some of them. And going into the playoffs, like I feel like, there's a lot of despair going on Rockets Twitter. Like, you feel like, especially after the game, you felt like there was a lot of doom and gloom. But I don't know. I don't feel that same way for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because you could say, well, they would have made it to the conference finals if they'd won one more regular season game. And I think that's true. But also, they didn't win that one more regular season game, right? So they only have themselves to blame for all this.
And in the end, if you're losing the Warriors in the second round or the conference finals, what's the difference?
Yeah, a difference is $1 million in Clint's salary is what the difference is.
Sure. Right.
I mean, the thing is that the goals they set out for themselves were to beat the Warriors and win the championship. That's their own stated goals. And I think it really locks you into only being able to judge them in that frame. They've done this to themselves. Like, if they were to take a step back and handle things differently, maybe there would be more room for like perspective on the Rockets, but they themselves leave none. And it's part of the penalty of being as excellent as they've been, and it's part of the penalty of how they've gone about things. So I think what the Rockets and what everyone else needs right now, and I'm going to say this over and over and over again, is that everyone needs a change in perspective. The Rockets need a change in perspective, so does everyone else. It's time to let go of this like beat the Warriors or die mentality. It's time to like move on past the only thing that matters is a championship. I actually think they probably stand a better chance of winning championships if they just learn to like let go and just play, just play. Just play. Stop worrying all stuff. Stop worrying about expectations. Stop setting expectations for yourself. Stop work like fans too. Stop working yourself into a lather about whether they're going to get there or not, and just appreciate them for the great team they are, and hopefully they just appreciate themselves too and do the best they can, and we have a good season.
Yeah, I don't think that's gonna happen. I don't think Daryl, I don't think James, I don't think Mike, I don't think any of those guys are gonna lower the bar. I just don't. Like, I think they understand the situation they're in. They're responsible with James Harden's prime. They realize the great responsibility that holds. And I think they really, especially ownership down, like Tillman after the game, just unprompted, just had a random press conference and talked about how we're going to win a championship with James Harden. That's going to happen. Like
I'm not saying to lower the bar though. I'm saying to change the bar. Instead of the bar being championship and beat the Warriors, I feel like it's much healthier to have the bar be better than we were yesterday, right? The bar is just be better. And stop, like the fact that they did play tight is a problem, right? Because if they weren't, if this wasn't like the culmination of everything, if they weren't, it felt like they were in their own heads a little bit, especially guys like Clint, right? There's so much tension and like neurosis exuding from that team. I feel like it would be better not only for their well-being and for our well-being, but also for their chances of winning if they're able to dispel some of that neurosis and just ball out, man. Just be better than you were yesterday every day.
Let's talk about Clint for a second, because I'm glad you brought him up. I nearly forgot that he was on my rundown. I completely forgot.
How could he not be?
Yeah, so he had an awful, awful Warriors series. Like this
might have been last year.
This might have been his worst series in a Rockets uniform. Like, it's not an exaggeration. This might be his worst playoff series in a Rockets uniform.
Yeah, followed closely by the Jazz in round one, by the way.
Yeah, not the best playoffs for Clint. He just, like, those baskets that we can just pencil in every game where those little lob system buckets with Harden and Capella, they just weren't there. They weren't there to be had. And for whatever reason, whether that be Draymond Green completely taking him out of the game, or him being in his own head and catching the ball and not finishing, like, he just wasn't effective in this series. And it's gotten a lot of backlash.
He ate everyone's lunch last year, right? Like, in the first two rounds of the playoffs, Karl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert both got totally sunned by him. And then this time around, Rudy Gobert owned him. That's a bad look.
No, I agree. I think a lot, most of it, like 90% of it, was warranted. What I really want to talk about is that 10% when we get into, oh, the Rockets definitely have to trade Clint Capella. Like, that's where I'm like, okay, let's just pump the brakes a little bit. Because I don't think people realize how important this dude is to what Houston likes to do.
Oh, they need him. They need him against 28 teams in the league. I mean, and he was excellent last year. So I think it's more about figuring out what went wrong than cutting bait.
Yeah, he's definitely, and we talked about it on the last podcast, like, he's definitely 10 to 15% worse than where he was last year as a basketball player. And that's really bad for a player in his early 20s or mid 20s or whatever, however old Clint Capella is now. That's not good. You got to get better. And the fact that he got worse, the fact that he was less mobile, the fact that the Rockets had to change their entire defense from switch everything to keep Clint Capella next to the rim is bad. Like, the Rockets could not play defense at the same level because Clint Capella could not switch and recover and grab rebounds. Like, that's not, like, that's something he was able to do last year, and this year he just wasn't. And in this series, especially in this series, because the Rockets so badly needed system buckets, they needed just the Warriors got a ton of system buckets. Like, you'd see backdoor cuts, you'd see layups, you'd see, like, stuff that the Warriors manufactured out of simply being the Warriors. The Rockets didn't have a lot of those, and Clint's to blame for a lot of that. And I understand the backlash, but when we get into the Rockets definitely have to trade him or they're screwed. Like, I'm just like, you know, like, he's super important. Like, he is super important. Offensively, James Harden's never had a better pick and roll partner. Like, and I don't think people remember the years where he had Dwight Howard demanding post touches and nobody setting screens for him. I think people have completely forgot about that. Like, the years where all the Rockets wanted was a center like Clint Capella, and yes, he performed poorly in the playoffs, but man, this guy is super important to what they do, especially in this particular system.
Yeah, I think that there's a bit of a rush to judgment to write off Clint Capela. Like he's had, he wasn't even bad during a season, really. He did have, like you said, the problem where he was not as good at switching as previously. But I think there also may be some more going on there than just Clint. The whole system had to be reorganized because of some personnel changes. Throwing the baby out with the bathwater because he had a bad year is not like, or not even a bad year, bad playoffs is a premature decision. They have him locked up through 2023. They don't have to worry about contract negotiations again this summer, thank God. So hopefully they can just get down to the business of figuring out what's going on with him, you know, getting in shape and training, getting ready for the next year. I think it should be a lot easier to deal with that this season because this offseason isn't going to be a bunch of weird chaos, hopefully. They don't have a lot of guys becoming free agents this time around.
Right, like, and I think it's reasonable to talk about Clint Capela as like a good trade chip, right? Like, I think it's reasonable to talk about him that way, but to talk about him as you got to get rid of him, you got to get rid of him. Like, I'm just like, okay, that's just a little bit too reactionary for my taste. I think we just like that's why I waited a week to do this because I think it was necessary for us to realize, man, like. A lot of the reactions coming out of Game 6 were just over the top. Like, I tweeted out a quote about Mike D'Antoni, and all of my mentions were, get rid of this bum. Like, it's time to fire him. like, I'm tired of seeing this guy. Like, most of my mentions were all about that. And I'm just like, okay, guys, like, you can't just tear everything down because you lost to the Warriors. Like, you lost to the best team in the NBA. You lost to the defending NBA champions. You lost to a team that won 3 out of the last 4 titles. Like, tearing everything down that got you there and made you competitive is not smart. It's not. Just no. Because you lost to the reigning NBA champion doesn't mean your formula is flawed.
Yeah, what they need is, honestly, stability and cohesion more than anything else right now. I think it would be a mistake to get rid of D'Antoni. Yeah, his rotations are sometimes difficult, but... Who's out there that's better? And more importantly, do you really want to shake all this up? I mean, unless there's stuff going on behind the scenes that we don't know about, I don't see any reason to suspect that this needs to get shaken up that much. Honestly, it seems like it needs to get settled down, if anything.
Yeah, and, like, you're right that his rotations are a little bit stiff, right? But every coach has a flaw like that annoys the hell out of their fan base. Like, every coach... Like I can go through the list and I can find you a flaw with every coach in the NBA. But largely, D'Antoni comes out in the green by a lot. Like, by a lot. He has a great relationship with the players in the locker room. James Harden loves playing for him. That's huge. I don't think we could have said that about Kevin McHale. And he's developed a system that's led Houston to a ton of offensive success. They've been a top two offense every single year he's been in Houston. And that's been the bedrock of their success. No matter what happens on the defensive side of the basketball, we can lock in this team is going to be awesome offensively because James Harden's there, because Mike D'Antoni's there, and like that stuff's super important. And this idea that you're going to find somebody on the open market that's an upgrade, like okay, let's just say Mike D'Antoni gets fired tomorrow. Let's just say that happened, right? So who on the open market's like a readily available upgrade? Like is Chris Finch gonna like be a huge upgrade? I don't know who you're gonna find. That's just like Mike's a Hall of Famer. I'm not sure if you guys realize that. Like he's gonna go down in the NBA as a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, unless like a Rick Carlisle or somebody comes available, there's no reason. You're just sowing chaos for just to feel like something different is being done. And sometimes there's nothing different to be done. Like you said, they lost to one of the two best teams of all time. It's okay. Like you just come back around it again. Just do the best you can and like stop panicking so much. Keep Daryl, keep Mike, you know, keep Tad Brown, keep Jeff Bizdella, keep everyone around, right? Keep all the key members around because this has gone fine. It's gone fine. Everyone calm down.
Yeah, like, and I'm not necessarily saying that there doesn't have to be change. Like, there's definitely going to be minor, at the very minimum, there's going to be minor changes to this roster this offseason. That's just the way it is. That's just the way Daryl operates. He's gonna bring in some new blood. He's gonna change stuff up, and the Rockets are going to look different next year in one way or another. And I'm not saying that the Rockets don't have to make wholesale changes to the roster. I'm saying it's not necessary. And saying that it is just a huge overreaction. It's just huge. Like, if the Rockets were to do anything, it's because they really, really want to beat the Warriors.
Yeah, honestly, the biggest concern the Rockets have right now, above and beyond everything else, is just that Chris Paul is not getting any younger. That's it. That's the problem they have right now. And that's not the worst place to be in.
Right, yeah. And that contract isn't pretty, and I get it. I understand the worry. What I would say is, like, when Daryl Morey signed that contract last July, like, he knew what he was doing. He knew the back end of that contract wasn't going to look pretty. I don't know if he expected this kind of drop-off in year one of that contract, but he definitely expected a drop-off. He's not naive.
Yeah, the drop-off wasn't as bad as people thought it was going to be, and it also was worse than, like, optimists thought it would be. So, honestly, not great, but acceptable.
Right, like, he had a 24 PER last year. He was, like, 19 this year. Like, that's definitely noticeable. But, first of all, like he had injury issues this year. And I think that's just something the Rockets are going to have to deal with for the rest of his career. Like, he just can't play more than 75 games a year anymore. I think that's just hard. It's hard to pencil him in for more than 60. Like, that's tough. But at the same time, that's still a really good basketball player. And again, I'm not necessarily saying that everything about the Rockets formula is perfect, but it's pretty damn great. Like, the Rockets are still going to be like if we were doing season predictions right now and the Rockets were to go on with the same core next year, I'm probably going to have them down for 54 plus wins. I'm not sure about you. I'm probably going to have them as a top four team in the West again.
Yeah, I'm not going to go out there and say that they're going to start 11 and 14 this next season also. Yeah, I think the expectation would be that even if they just manage to keep the same roster throughout the whole of next season, that's better than what last season was.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think the huge overreaction to losing the Warriors is just a little unwarranted.
I think a lot of it is that people are finally realizing that,
the Warriors are really good.
Oh, yeah, this Rockets team just might not win any championships ever. Like, yeah, but you should have already known that. That's just the NBA. If you pin your hope, if it's championship or bust, it's going to be bust like 97% of the time.
Right, and I think it's the idea that Harden turns 30 in August and people are starting to visualize a world in which James Harden retires without a championship, and that's just really tough. I get it. That's tough. But it's not like the Rockets aren't doing everything they can to make that future not happen. Like, Daryl in that front office, they're not sitting around. Like, they're not like, okay, I guess we're not beating them. We're just going to go into next year and not try. Like, they're doing everything they possibly can, and they, for the most part, they've done a pretty good job at trying to. They're moving this giant boulder uphill, is what they're doing. Like, this is the first year I picked the Rockets to win, and they played the Warriors four times. I don't think I'm ever gonna pick the Rockets again, but at the same time, like, they just have a better formula than 26 other teams.
Yeah, at least 26. Yeah, it doesn't help that they keep calling their shot regarding pushing that rock up the hill. Every year they're like, we're going to get this rock over the top of the hill. So it does, after a point, I think, hurt that you keep coming short of what you said you're going to do. But I don't know. It's an easy fix. So stop saying you're going to get the boulder over.
I guess the alternative is lowering the bar, and lowering the bar is equally as disappointing if you're a fan.
Like,
right?
I said, you don't have to lower the bar. They can just stop calling their shot. They can just stop saying anything. Well, just don't say we're going. Like, they can say, yeah, our goal is to win a championship, but stop being like, no, we're the best threats. We're the ones out there. Like, stop pinning their worth on being able to overcome this impossible hurdle.
Well, that's a little tricky because Daryl gets asked that question all the time, right? Like,
yeah,
at some point.
But he also says it all the time, though. I mean, it is a bit of both, if you ask me.
Right. He does say it unprompted sometimes too. I get it, but I don't know, like. That's the team you have to beat. Like, why beat around the bushes? You know, like, that is like if you're gonna win a championship, you're gonna have to go through that team. I don't understand why you have to verbally hide behind we're gonna win a championship. Like obviously, if you say you're gonna win a championship, you're saying we're gonna beat the Warriors. So you might as well say we're gonna beat the Warriors.
I guess, but you're not going to beat the Warriors, so stop saying you're going to do it. You can say that your plan is to do it, but it, like, what I'm kind of getting at is the difference between saying that, like, you're going to try to do it and saying, like, you are going to do it. And I know that there's so much of, like, American culture tells people, like, there is no try, only do, right? Like, no, it's saying you're going to, you don't say that you're going to attempt something, say that you will do it, because then you'll excuse yourself failing if you don't, but you're just going to fail sometimes. Everyone's just going to fail sometimes. And setting yourself up in a situation where when you inevitably do fail, it undermines you, isn't going to help you any. Like, I really think they need stability and they need perspective and they need to just chill. They need to just chill and make some improvements and not try to, like, go crazy. Don't overreact. This is one of the only times everyone's going to say this. Don't overreact.
So we briefly touched on it. Let's talk about the offseason. Where do the Rockets go from here?
Well, I mean, you see what's out there, right? You always make a college try at the big names, right? Because why wouldn't you? I mean, while I'm saying everyone needs to chill, if someone falls in your lap, they fall in your lap, right? If you can get, like, a Jimmy Butler or something, that's cool, I guess. Why not? And, you know, who knows, maybe you can work some kind of weird, like, free agency miracle or something. But barring those extreme outliers that I really doubt are going to happen, I think they just have to try to find a way to get some guys who are going to suit their needs. Honestly, they need to find it, like, a someone to replace that Trevor Ariza role, and or make sure the house is actually ready to replace that role, as he tried and failed to do during the playoffs.
Yeah, I think one thing that's different from last offseason is they now have clear needs, right? Like, last year, it was like, okay, like, just don't decline. Don't decline. Do everything that you can do to make sure you're not worse. Now there are legitimate paths to upgrade, right? Like, we know that they're not the best defensive team. We know that they're not the best rebounding team. Those are two areas that you can look at and try to upgrade. And I think that's a difference. That's a positive going into the offseason. It's like, you don't have to worry about trying to bring back Clint, trying to bring back Chris Paul. Like those guys are locked under your core is locked under contract. I think that's largely a good thing, because you don't have to worry about, like, trying to bring them back at the same time trying not to decline, right? Now you can just try to upgrade. Now you can just try to upgrade around the edges of your roster. Try to find your next 3-and-D guy. Try to bring back Iman Shumpert, since you already have his bird rights. And, you know, see what you can do with that taxpayer MLE. See what that gets you. Maybe hold on to it if it's not the best thing. But one thing I think is going to be a big, big sticking point is the Rockets have to spend money. If Tillman Fertitta is going to come out of Game 6 and talk about how we're definitely going to win a championship with James Harden.
Yeah, you got to go all in.
You got to put your money where your mouth is, man. Like this is it. Like, okay, you're going to dodge the repeater tax, but now you got to pay the actual luxury tax. Like, there's no messing around here. You gotta spend. You have to spend.
Yeah, everybody they have bird rights on, which is basically just Shumpert. Yeah, do not be surprised if Shumpert gets, like, a pretty big size contract, because why not, right? At this point, like, it doesn't. They're over the cap anyway, so it doesn't matter if they extend their guys. All they'll have to worry about is can they hang on to the players worth hanging on to, which basically it's what are they gonna do about House, Rivers, and Kenneth Faried. And then are they going to, like, grab anybody else to improve around the edges, right? So we'll see how that goes, right? I honestly think that they should make a real effort to retain Daniel House, and he actually did them a favor, I think, in that sense. Yeah, like, by being hurt for a lot of the playoffs and not impressing anybody, like, I think he's got a lot of potential if they can develop him a little bit. But he looked like he was primed to go get, like a real contract, but perhaps that's cooled off a little bit. We'll see. Yeah. It would be nice if they can get him back at, like, you know, a few million dollars a year.
It's one of those situations where I'm not sure which camp has a leverage anymore. Like, I'm not sure. Like, I thought it was Daniel House. Now I'm not sure because of the way this postseason ended out. But you're right. Like, they have to try and bring back the best of their bunch. But at the same time, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world if they don't bring everybody back. Like, I'm not sure if you have to bring, like, there's been all this talk about how you have to bring Austin Rivers back. Like, yeah, you prefer to have him back. I'm not sure if that's a have to. I'm not sure if any of these players are like, you have to bring him back. Like, maybe Iman Shumpert, because there's no reason to not bring him back, because it's just money. Like, if you're going to spend, might as well spend to bring him back. And with these other guys, you're going to have to spend some of that taxpayer MLE. If you feel like you can get something better, you know, like, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to, like, not bring everybody back. Especially, like, you know, I'm not sure if Kenneth Faried's, like, a have-to-bring-him-back kind of guy.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. Yeah, I think it would be nice to bring them back, but yeah, I agree. I don't think these guys are that necessary. Faried was pretty good during a regular season. I don't know that he's... I mean, he played above his contract, but his contract was a minimum contract they signed, like, during buyouts. So they can probably get something better. It's not a huge loss if he does go elsewhere. Austin Rivers was a pretty big help, but he's not a huge help. There are other guys who can handle the ball and shoot a three. His defense is pretty good on, like, Steph in particular. He can do some things, but he's not irreplaceable. He just isn't.
Yeah, I don't think any of these guys are irreplaceable. I'm just interested to see what they do. Like, I thought last year, like, you had to bring back Clint Capela. You had to bring back Chris Paul, because you weren't going to find anyone else that could replace that kind of production. You just weren't. And this year, it's like, I think they might try and extend Eric Gordon. That's going to be something to keep an eye on. Like, I think Eric Gordon's going to be a hot extension target to see if they actually pull the trigger on that. But other than that, like, there's not really much that you have to bring back.
Yeah, I feel like basically anybody they can extend, they might as well just extend them until the end of the Chris Paul contract. That's your end date, right? Like, spend as much money as you want for these next three seasons. It doesn't really matter. You're going to be capped out during all of them. Go into the tax. Who cares? You know, after Chris Paul's contract ends, then you just go back into below the luxury tax, because all these contracts are going to end around that time. So, yeah, I think if they can give all these guys almost any given contract over the next three seasons, why not just make them happy, give them what you can give them, lock everything down so you're not worried about it, and just play out the string and see how it goes. There's really nothing, especially if you can get them on like a not even a small contract, but like a moderate contract where they could potentially be used in a trade if necessary. Hey, why not just get them on the books and not have to worry about it anymore.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. This offseason is gonna be fun. Especially since there's not that overwhelming pressure to bring guys back. Like, it's going to be fun to see what Darrow does with the back end of this roster and potentially the front end of this roster.
It'll be better than last season, that's for sure. Last offseason was a real kick in the pants.
Yeah, less stressful than last offseason for Rockets fans, I'd imagine. It should be fun to see if Darrow tries to get aggressive in some trade talks. It's going to be fun. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Follow me on Twitter at SomaliNBA. Follow Forrest on Twitter at Do Not. How do you spell that, Forrest?
It's Dunots.
And yeah, guys, good night.